bring in Elliot Friedman, NHL insider, the NHL and Sportsnet. How you doing, Mr. Friedman?
Doing well, Jeff. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Summer's almost here, my friend.
Yes, it is.
And you're going to disappear, right?
Like the wind.
Well, we still have a little bit of work for you to do before you take off. What do you make of this report out of Edmonton? The Oilers and Connor McDavid discussing a contract and seemingly 8 years and around $13 million a year, which, as you point out on Twitter, I mean, I that would be a pretty good deal for Edmonton, would it not?
Well, put it this way, they're going to make a lot more than $13 million a year off him.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, there's no question about that. It's, you know, it's the bottom line is there was a lot of talk that he was only going to sign for 5 years because a number of players did that. Crosby did that. Malkin did that. Stamkos did that. Kane and Taves did that. And then they went to their third contracts, which were their big ones. So Edmonton gets a victory out of that. And I know there's some people who can't wrap their head around 13.25, but you can't do backdiving contracts anymore. You're going to make a fortune off him. He's going to be the best player in the league. I think Crosby reminded us in the playoffs that he's still the best player in the league. But McDavid is damn close. And, you know, I mean, it's a win for them. They get him for 9 more years. And I just did a little bit of math because the one thing I always look about is the percentage of the cap. You know, if you take a look at it, Malkin and Crosby both came in around 15% of the cap in the year that they took their second deals, and they both got 8.7, and Sid still makes 8.7, and now Malkin makes 9.5, but they both came in around 15.3%. And McDavid, if the cap stays flat, he's going to be at 17.6% in 2018-19. But the cap usually moves a bit. So as long as it does, I think it's going to stay in line.
So it'll be, in other words, what you're saying, it'll be someplace in that 15 to 16.5 range, probably.
Something like that, yes.
Which is leave aside the impact this is going to have on Austin Matthews for a minute, but my first thought was, okay, what does this do to the Oilers down the road? Because you've got some other young players you're going to have to deal with as well. But if you put it in that context, Elliot, you're not going to go out and spend crazy, but it certainly shouldn't hamstring you. Should it? As long as you win, it shouldn't hamstring you. I guess that would be the caveat.
Yes, and Chris Johnston just pointed out that. The record, I believe, is Ovechkin in the cap world. He was at 19% when he signed his.
Okay.
So, this is not out of line for a superstar player. Mm-hmm. And, Jeff, I know there's some people who hear that number and they go crazy. I just, you know what? The way I look at it, he deserves every penny. I don't get mad at people signing for the most money they can, especially when, you know, you're, as an athlete, your prime earning power is a lot shorter than a lot of other people.
Well, and I think most of us have kind of moved beyond the shock value in that area. But also, I mean, I'm thinking back to, you know, there have been a lot of economic studies, and I know you're well aware of this. Grange wrote about this in detail a couple of years ago. I mean, you can make a case that a guy like LeBron James, as much money as he's making, you can make a case that in kind of real world money, he's underpaid.
Yes, you could.
You really can.
Yes, you could. In terms of what he'd be worth on the open market, absolutely. Absolutely, you can argue that. And I remember, actually, a matter of fact, a couple of years ago when Felix Hernandez signed his big extension, like $175 million in Seattle, LeBron James tweeted out, $175 million. Like, I should have played baseball.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I mean, that's the economics. Every sport's economics is different. Some sports have caps, others don't. You know, I think in any walk of life, you know, if somebody wants to cut the best deal for themselves, I don't blame them. And the other thing too is, I mean, you know, if Connor McDavid walked in there and say, I want the maximum 20% of the cap for 5 years, you know, Edmonton was going to have no choice but to do it. So I know people can't wrap their heads around it, but in his own way, he did do them a favor.
You know, anytime a deal like that is signed in baseball, we always kind of wonder what the Players Association angle of it is. I mean, there's always this idea. And it's, you know, the Players Association does put some pressure on free agents to get maximum money because a rising tide lifts all boats, et cetera, et cetera. A little different in a salary cap league. From the Players Association's point of view, Elliot, or from the point of view of other players in the league, are they happy to see a guy who is arguably going to be the face of the game in another, probably in another 3 or 4 years? I mean, I don't know, maybe Sidney keeps playing 5 years, but he's certainly going to be one of the co-faces of the game. Will they be happy with this contract?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, there's no question that, you know, there's no question that it will change the contracts in the league. Like, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and all of a sudden you're looking at Auston Matthews, now you're thinking, okay, like, is this the number that we have to budget for in 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
And, but the one thing I think, though, is in a cap world, you know, people talk about the, like, I look at it from the Players Association point of view is, you're getting 50-50. Regardless of what happens, whether Connor McDavid signs for $7, $10, or $13 million, you are getting 50% of the revenue with the league. You're sharing it. That's the way the CBA goes. So you maybe you do want your star players making more money, but it affects the money that other players make around the league.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes escrow. And when players get injured, that affects how much money the players make, because that creates more escrow. So people do say to me, well, that's a win for the Players Association. It's a win for the best players. Okay. But I also look at it as, you know, the system is fixed to a certain amount. So if you go over your share, you have to give money back. So, you know, sometimes when people say to me, well, the Players Association pushes people to get the most money, I'm sure there are people in the Players Association, maybe even other players, who would prefer maybe that didn't happen because it affects how much they take home at the end of the year.
I just I found this interesting reading your 30 Thoughts column earlier this morning, and I want to shift focus a little bit. We'll get to Auston Matthews in a minute, but you talked about that whole the value of first round picks as a result of the Travis Hamonic deal, and how it kind of seems that hockey's, Elliot, sort of trying to get to the point that baseball's at now, where baseball, and Mark Shapiro will tell you, we can actually do a dollar value of a prospect by breaking it down into win shares and all that. We're getting to that point almost in hockey now where you're almost able to quantify the value, or we're getting close to quantifying the value of a draft pick, aren't we? Which is really fascinating because it opens a whole bunch of possibilities.
Yes. You know, there definitely is something going on, and that was what I was trying to find out.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Calgary was doing something like that, Jeff, like just saying when they were working on this deal with Hamonic, they were sitting there and they were saying, okay, like what are the chances we're giving up superstars with these picks? What kind of players can we expect to give up with these picks? And of course they wouldn't talk about it because teams, as you know, they hoard this information.
Sure.
Like it's the nuclear codes. But you know, I tried to talk to some other guys I know who do work on that. And, you know, the one thing that's really interesting to me is, and Steve Birch wrote a column for Sportsnet about it two years ago, and I understand it still holds, is that most people do agree with one of his major conclusions there, and that is that the draft takes a big drop after the third pick.
Mm-hmm.
And that later first-round picks are really not that valuable historically. So I think if you're Calgary, you're looking at this deal, Jeff, like, if we do our jobs on the ice, we're going to be fine. You're taking a chance that New York is not going to draft a player as good as Travis Hamonic is. But if you obviously don't do that well on the ice, then you're starting to worry and say, okay, what exactly did we give up here? So I think you look at it and you say, okay, over the draft in the last 20 years, this is an example of what we could potentially be giving up, but we like our odds as long as we play to our potential. And I'm fascinated by that, Jeff. And, you know, some people won't really give up a lot of their mechanics or mm-hmm. information, but the one thing they do agree on is you really don't trade out of the top three.
Yeah, I read that piece and I was laughing because it's so similar to stuff people have talked about in baseball and you know, and I had a conversation sort of in a similar vein with Mark Shapiro. I just found it fascinating that they you know, can now sort of use win shares and everything and basically tell you what a prospect's worth. And it's so different than how I'm used to talking about it or how I'm used to thinking about it. You know, it really is. I want to go back to the Leafs in particular as we get ready for NHL signing season. And I wanted to ask you about Auston Matthews and the impact this contract might have on him. And here's where I find this kind of interesting. I don't know if Connor McDavid's people, Elliot, went to the Oilers and said, you know, look, we've got this is data on how many jerseys he's selling, or, you know, we've got data that shows what the actual economic impact of Connor McDavid is on your revenue. I wonder if Auston Matthews' people would take that approach. Would that be when dealing with the Leafs? Or do you think that the market for Auston Matthews is basically set now?
You know, I think we're in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never know what can happen in 2 years, right? Where's the cap going? You know, what does Matthews think? Is he happy in Toronto? And there's no reason to believe he isn't. I'm just saying, in 2 years when you're doing this, and actually, to be honest, they could do it next summer. You know, is he happy? Is he happy with the way the team's going? What does he look at McDavid's contract? Is it important to him to be the highest paid guy, or his agents to be the highest paid guy? You know, what do the Leafs try to convince him to do? But yes, I think you have to look at this and say, this is kind of the benchmark for where Matthews is going to be. And to your first question, Jeff, I think absolutely you look at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things you're looking at in Edmonton is, you know, not only is this about jerseys, but you look last year in the playoffs, Edmonton could sell, what, $80 to watch the game in the concourse?
Yeah.
And some of that, you could argue how much of that is Connor McDavid. A chunk of it, those fans, they love the Oilers, but they've got a superstar player that makes you want to be part of it even more. You know, Edmonton's, like Toronto did, they're building condos there. And how many of those condos are they going to sell, or how much money are they going to make off the hotel and stuff like that, partially because of Connor McDavid. So I think it goes into all of that. That's why when I see the number and people say, well, is he worth it? From a business point of view, I mean, that new arena and everything that's going on around it, how much more excitement is there because they've got a guy wearing 97?
Absolutely. All right.
Like, you know, Jeff, I remember, like, when Roger Clemens was with the Jays.
Right.
I remember the Jays did a study on how much the attendance changed when Clemens pitched for Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't move very much.
No, it didn't.
They were really disappointed to find that out. So it's the kind of thing I've always kept an eye on since 97 and 98. It's like, who moves the needle? And there's no question that Connor McDavid moves the needle. Even in Toronto, they were flat here the last couple of years. And you don't think Auston Matthews moves the needle in the same way that Connor McDavid did? Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I've always found it fascinating how, in a salary cap league, though, how an agent kind of approaches a team and essentially says, let's be honest, my client's selling more jerseys than player X. He should be paid more than player X. Or just trying to factor in the whole relative value of a guy to a team's revenue base. So as we approach the signing season, Elliot, the key question in Toronto with the Maple Leafs focuses on the defense. No surprise. Is there anything out there, any player out there you think addresses any of their needs, or you know, are the Leafs almost, are they almost better advised now, Elliot, to maybe just kind of keep their powder dry a little bit, see what they have in the group they have for another year, maybe add somebody who gives them a little more depth as opposed to somebody who might come in and be a number one or a number two defenseman?
I think they've looked around at things. I think the way they're looking at it is, you know, what can we do for a couple of years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can we do for a couple of years before now, obviously, the big contracts come in? And, you know, Matthews, Nylander, Marner, you know, they're obviously going to have to pay these guys in a pretty hefty way. So I think they're looking at it, you know, in terms of, we've got a window open now. We took the President's Trophy winner five times in overtime in a six-game series. We played them pretty hard. You know, what can we do there? And I think that's kind of where they are right now, is what are we going to do to give us a chance to win in the next couple of years? And, you know, I know we mentioned, you know, would they take a look at a guy like Joe Thornton, who Mike Babcock knows really well? I'm sure that those are the kinds of things that they are exploring. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with. As we know now, since Lamoriello got there, it's much harder to figure out what they're up to. But I guess I definitely have the sense that they are trying to do something very big to try to give them a chance the next couple of seasons.